Welcome back to Sports. It's all for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. You know, Shane, having known me for a while now, that I'm very anti the reverse...
The reverse
Moz.
Yeah, I know you are.
The reverse Moz. I don't like it. I don't like when people get away with it. Mm. And our next guest, Daniel Garb, did exactly that last night when he tweeted a couple of hours before kickoff that he thought Liverpool's unbeaten run at Anfield was going to come to an end because Leicester had been in very good form away, and also Liverpool were ravaged with injury. But as soon as he sent that tweet out, as soon as it went into the ether, there was no way that they were going to lose. And they didn't. They won quite comfortably in the end, even with Firmino scoring the goal that wasn't. That's the closest ever goal that never crossed the line that I've ever seen. Anyway, let's welcome Daniel Garb. Garby, well done on the reverse Moz.
Very good, Samuel. Very good. I'll pay that. It wasn't quite Liverpool will lose. It was, you know...
Yes, it was.
...for them against Leicester side that is exceptional away from home up until this morning. And as you said, Liverpool's team looked a shadow of its best 11. So, yeah, I was fearful. I was certainly fearful. But, you know, I was never doubting this team. I perhaps thought it might be a stern test for them and Leicester might get something from the game. But, yeah, they're just an incredible squad. And the mentality of this group, no matter who comes in, is just something to behold. It doesn't matter if you haven't played for 3 months. They'll step in and run through a wall for Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, they do actually remind me of the Liverpool side that was dominant through Rafa Benitez's years, through, you know, Fernando Torres' peak of powers. Anyway, we digress. Hey, Garby, I thought Tottenham at the start of the year were a bit of hot air, I've got to be honest. They haven't run out of steam, though. Is Jose Mourinho's side a legitimate chance of winning the title this year, do you think? Or is it still too early to tell?
Look, it's early, but I think there's reason to be confident about that. If they can get through to Christmas in this position where they're close with Liverpool and Chelsea, who are going along very well at the moment, then I'd say so in a season like this where, as we know, being basically neutral venues all the way through and probably going to stay that way considering the state of things in the UK, considering the corona numbers, that, yeah, there's certainly a very big chance. The key for them is keeping Heung-Min Song and Harry Kane fit.
Yep.
If they keep those two fit, then they've got an incredible duo and a combination that is as strong as any in the competition when it comes to contributing in front of goal. And Mourinho is getting into the mentality of this team. You can tell he's starting to have an impact. He's still got a bit of a special touch about him, which was the big question mark about Spurs going into the season. So a big win over City. City are a worry, though. I look at that team and I just go, where's the intimidation coming from? You know, where is the physicality of this Man City team coming from? Where's the Yaya Toure of years gone by?
Yeah.
Where's the Vincent Kompany? They're all beautiful footballers. But in the Premier League, you need some mongrel. Look at all the great teams of the past. They've all had, you know, a Tony Adams and a Vieira at Arsenal. All the United players, the Keane, the Ferdinand, the Vidic types. Where is that in this Man City squad? Where's the Van Dijk or the Henderson or the Fabinho? There's nothing like that. So when they're not at their best, they're very easy to run over at the moment. That's a big worry for Pep.
Yeah, it's been difficult to see the demise of Manchester City. I've certainly been saving all my tears with that one. With Chelsea, Garvey, I feel like they're a little bit similar to City, to be honest. They look really potent. And that side that Frank Lampard keeps picking with basically five attacking players forward of N'Golo Kante, they look great going forward. For me, they still look brittle in defence. Do they need to sort that out before being considered a genuine contender?
I would say so, but it's starting to be alleviated, that defensive issue, with the change in goals. I think Mendy has looked really strong, hasn't he?
And Silva,
and they've removed that problem that was Kepa in between the sticks, and that's starting to permeate throughout the team. A keeper in form, a keeper who looks confident, instills confidence in an entire team defensively. So you can see that starting to marinate itself in that Chelsea back line. But going forward, they look really promising. They'll be inconsistent. There's no way that Chelsea can be stable all season long when they've had so much change in the team. But the changes come with extreme talent. And you look at the players they've brought in. They'll be hot for periods. Then they'll have a dip for a game or two, and then they'll get back to it. I think they're a top four team. Whether they can mount a title challenge, we'll wait and see.
But
they're playing some lovely football at the moment. Their first half against Newcastle was really strong away from home.
Garby, before we bring it back to Australia, let's go via Doha, because that's where a number of A-League teams are fulfilling their Asian Champions League commitments at the moment. I want to talk about Melbourne Victory. We had Grant Bremner on the program last week, and he was looking forward to getting this group together over in Qatar. But even he admitted that this isn't my priority. This Champions League will be an opportunity to get the team on the field, but it's all about preparing for the A-League season proper at the moment. Is that a normal approach for an A-League team, or is Grant Bredner somewhat special here?
I think he's probably trying to dull and dilute expectations a little bit, which is fair from a manager stepping into his first season in charge. The Asian Champions League is incredibly difficult for Australian teams. They just don't have the budgets to match it with the Asian teams and the millions they've got to spend and the resources they've got at their disposal. So a new manager coming in, he knows the expectations at the Melbourne Victory. He knows that every time they step on the field, their fans, and there's already 15,000 members signed up already for next season. They're a big club. They want this team to be super competitive, and they want this team to go out there and win every game they can. But he knows it's going to be very difficult in the Asian Champions League. So he's probably just trying to, you know, be a little bit tactical with that as he steps into this competition, while at the same time, behind closed doors, trying to get this team to produce as well as they can straight away. They've got a number of new signings coming in, the likes of Callum McManaman and Jacob Butterfield and Ben Salami. They're still looking for a new striker. So it's very difficult for him to get them to produce their best football right now when there's so much change at the club. But he knows the competitive streak in Bredner. When they step out on their pitch, he'll want to win. But, you know, expectations for the Aussie teams throughout this competition can't be high because it's just so difficult, especially in this unique hub situation in Qatar.
In any other year, we're well and truly into the A-League season by now. It won't start until December 27. Fixture to be released tomorrow. Garvey, what are we expecting from the A-League in terms of a fixture? Will they just open it up and have teams playing at their respective home grounds and maybe an asterisk in case they have to go to a hub situation? What's the plan?
Yeah, hard to know at this stage. I guess the only state that's a big concern at the moment is WA. So perhaps the first month or so is the Glory playing outside of WA, and then they reassess things after that if Mark McGowan decides to open up the borders. Other than that, I think it'll be okay for the rest of the country. One of the interesting points for Melbourne will be where Western United plays, because there's a lot of talk that they want to play at Amy Park, which means you'll have all three teams from Melbourne playing at Amy Park. Western United at Amy Park, I'm not sure I get that. I mean, what are they doing? They're not really forging their own identity out there in the west of Melbourne if they're playing at Amy Park, the same stadium as Melbourne City and Melbourne Victory. So that's a weird one for me.
Garby,
that's going to be the one that really grabs our attention.
I couldn't agree with you more. And when I heard this last week, that I know that Melbourne Victory and Melbourne City aren't overly impressed with it. They've tried to make this home ground. We saw Western United last year play down at GMHBA Stadium while they wait for their new stadium in Tarnit. But I thought this franchise was all about capturing that western side of town, west of the Westgate Bridge. So Geelong, Ballarat, all of a sudden they're coming back into the city. And I mean, the city is controlled by Melbourne City and Melbourne Victory primarily.
Yeah, and they're fans that they're starting to grow out there. They're going to trek all the way to Amy Park to watch
Correct. Their
team all of a sudden play in a stadium that, you know, the two big teams in Melbourne already occupy. You're not building anything there. And, you know, what this is going to do, if that does happen to be the case, is put the microscope firmly on them from the members of the football community and the members of the football media saying, well, when's your new stadium going to be built? All right, COVID's affected everything, but that's what your bid was sold on. A stadium that you owned, a football-first stadium that you owned out in the West for the people. What's happening with it? Because if you don't have that stadium, your bid doesn't seem to be that strong. And the future of this club, unfortunately, is something that people are going to have question marks around. I'd love to see them play at Melbourne Knights Stadium at the old Addenza Park. Play out there, a proper football venue out in Melbourne's west, and start connecting with the locals and start to attract some of those real football people who are probably keen to watch some professional football through the summer and through those periods. But playing at Amy Park, to me, it just doesn't make sense.
Totally agree.
Garby, you're not only one of the leading voices of soccer in this country, you're also a West Coast Nuffy. What chance for the flag next year?
I think a reasonably good one. Teams are competitive when you look at the recruiting of Geelong and St Kilda and the Dogs and so on and so forth. But I love the Alex Witherden recruit. I think that's going to be a good one for the Eagles. His foot skills out of the fence are going to be very handy. And hopefully Zach Langdon adds a few goals. So if we can keep injury free, I think we've still got a bevy of A-graders that can lead us to a premiership challenge. But there's so many teams competing, it's hard to be confident. But I can't wait for it. We've got a couple of years, don't we, the Eagles? And then we might just fall off the cliff a little bit when too many players get a bit too old. So the next 2 years are critical.
I'm not so sure. I actually quite like the West Coast.
I like some of the young kids coming through
I reckon,
as well. They're maturing well.
I reckon they're going to be pretty good for a while, but we digress. So, Garby, great to have you on.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate it.
Daniel Garb there from the World Game. He's, well, his knowledge of the game is just second to none for mine when it comes
When it comes to football journos in this country, the fact that he can talk about all the different codes, be it Premier League, A-League, he knows what's happening. Very, very good man.
I don't mean to go back in time now, but and I know that Optus are doing great things with the EPL coverage, and I've finally bought their yearly package. But I yearn for the days of staying up until 1:30 in the morning watching live EPL. And at halftime, you go and make your cup of tea or coffee or whatever it was to keep you up. And there's Garvey doing a cross on the touchline. No, but seriously, like it felt so special being such a small country in Australia and yet having a guy there on the touchline at Old Trafford at halftime between Manchester United and Manchester City, the biggest game in the world at that time, at that moment. And there he is delivering. Do you remember the desk as well with Mark Bosnich and Robbie Slater? And I'm trying to think who else is on it. Tara Rushton, maybe. Adam Peacock. Thank you, Benny.
We're biased because we're very fortunate to work in this industry. But I always think it's great to have someone on the ground at a location to be able to
agree. That's
take
your own.
Correct. Yeah. To take in what is happening, to bring in all the stories, the atmosphere together. And it just simply localizes it because, you know, fans aren't stupid. They know when you're taking Sky or BBC coverage.
Yeah.
But to have your
you don't
guy
feel as connected.
Correct. To have your guy there who will touch on and talk about the topics relevant to the Australian audience. Yeah, I think it's something the broadcasters very much need to keep in mind.
I agree. He's a great man, Garby, very good at what he does. More sports day to come for Wilson Holmes.